following is part two of Father John A. Hardin's class on the subject Practical Methods of Mental Prayer. Father Hardin.
His providence is his manner of speaking. It is, you might say, the language of God. And this is one language that it is imperative we learn. On rare occasion in our lives, maybe never in our individual lives, will God exercise what we call his miraculous providence by giving us a revelation. But he is always speaking to us. And his language is the providential care that he exercises in everything in our lives. Consequently, his providence is his talking to us. What is prayer? We talking to him. We then respond to him when we pray and engage him in conversation. The myriad ways in a given day that God talks to us. Now, the only trouble with language like this is that we're liable to think it is either rhetorical or somehow artificial or unreal. It's the realest thing in the world. Theologically speaking, everything that exists has God as its first cause within it. Everything that occurs has God as its first agent in acting. What providence is meant to do is to evoke from us a response to God's acting. Somebody says someone unkind. No, they didn't. It was God who was behind that speech, but it was unkind. I repeat, God was behind that speech. If nothing else, I have it coming. Oh, when people fall asleep on me, which they sometimes do in class, I tell them, well, and I wake them up by calling on them, calling their names. By the way, do you know that people wake up when you call their names? They may be asleep. It's beautiful. That I am part of God's providence in your life, trying your patience. I just wish I could spend not minutes but hours on this subject. This is prayer in action. Man's response to God's providence. This is what makes prayer constant, because God is always acting in my favor, talking to me, and then I pay him the courtesy. I pay attention to God. My basic definition for prayer. Number five, resignation to God's will. What we are here talking about is the predisposition that over the centuries spiritual masters have said are necessary to cultivate the habit of mental prayer. Resignation to God's will. You might say this stands to reason, that a person who is not resigned to God's will scarcely cultivate the spirit of prayer. And that for the very best of reasons, because it is implied that when I pray, I want to both know and do God's will. So the lack of resignation to God's will is a sure way of blocking the spirit of prayer. Either I am resigned to God's will, or common sense will tell me I shouldn't be praying. Number 6. Self-denial. Mortification, and not only of body but also of spirit, is necessary to even begin, let alone foster, the practice of mental prayer. What does this self-denial consist in? It consists in many things, but I would say especially interior self-denial. A person who wishes to cultivate the habit of mental prayer must be willing to put other thoughts that have nothing to do with prayer out of the mind, and especially must deny himself such desires as faith and reason tell him are inconsistent with the will of God. Moreover, in order to pray at all, and certainly to pray well, I must be willing to forego many things which, if I want to pray well, I must be willing to give up. Distractions in prayer, vain imaginings, daydreaming, all those are signs of a lack of self-denial. When we say self-denial, we don't mean, of course, simply denying oneself legitimate thoughts and the right kind of desires. Self-denial means the denial of the selfish part of the self. The things that say, as a religious, I shouldn't be thinking about, I shouldn't be desiring, and insofar as I control, especially, my interior sentiments of soul, I will happily cultivate the spirit of prayer. Number 7. The habit of solitude and silence. This does not mean that a person cannot pray unless he or she is living in solitude. On the other hand, a certain degree of separateness, both physical and especially psychological, is necessary to foster the spirit of prayer. Why should that be? Because when we say solitude, we don't literally mean that a person is alone. We mean that a person is separated from unnecessary contact and communication with other human beings. All the masters of spirituality, among whom the most outstanding is John of the Cross, tell us we shall be united with God in prayer only in the degree to which we are willing to be separated from human beings. There's a phrase in St. Benedict that I can't remember how many years ago I read it and has been the motto of my life. O beata solitudo, O blessed solitude. A person who is not resolved to be separated from the company of and communication with other human beings is unwilling to cultivate the habit of prayer. Number 8, spiritual reading. The word spiritual reading is ambiguous because there is a sense in which all reading can, by an extension of language, be said to be spiritual. For example, a person could say, opening up the New York Times or Sports Illustrated, and tell himself comfortably, my intention here is a deeply spiritual one. And then proceed to glut his imagination with what he or she is reading. Spiritual reading I define as that reading which has been expressly written to nourish the mind with spiritual thoughts. The scriptures are, of course, the outstanding example. The lives of the saints, writings by the saints about the spiritual life, on the what, why, and how of spirituality. Why is spiritual reading so important to cultivate the habit of prayer? Because all ideas in the mind begin with experiences outside the mind. There is nothing we have inside our intellects which is not somehow entered from the outside. Unless then I make sure that my internal spirit is nourished by food from the outside, I am not serious about prayer. Spiritual reading is not yet prayer, but spiritual reading feeds the mind. I must first know who God is. I must have God and the things of God first on my mind. Otherwise, I cannot begin to pray. The will, which is the essential faculty in prayer, must be nourished by the mind. There was a phrase in Latin that has come down over the centuries. Nihil in voluntate, nisi prius in intellectu. There is nothing in the will unless it has first been in the intellect. Spiritual reading, all the great writings on prayer and the spiritual life tell us, spiritual reading, daily spiritual reading, is necessary in order to fill the mind with holy thoughts so that my will can have holy desires, which is another description of prayer. Number 9, the practice of charity. I believe there is no single aspect of the formation of religions that is more important than that the young religious, or the not so young, depending on their age of entrance, practice charity. More than once in the Gospels, Christ tells us, "Give, and it will be given unto you." God gives Himself only to those who give themselves to others. And you don't pray without a lot of grace from God. Either you, to coin a term, give grace to others, or God will not give His grace to you. And in the language of other nations, not in English, the word grace in English is ambiguous. Grace this and grace that. But the original meaning of grace in the Greek and the Latin is love. St. Paul's term, charis, charis. One guess what English word comes from charis. God will give His charis to you if you give yours to others. And nobody cheats here. I've dealt with people 20, 30 and more years in the religious life. They've read all the books of Teresa of Avila, John of the Cross, Catherine of Siena. They've read Grew and Tanqueray and Lean. But, "Father, I have trouble with my prayer." And with a little impertinent questioning, I find out they are not really practicing selfless charity. Sister, you can put all the books away. Start loving people. Give yourself. Be patient. Be kind. Be understanding. And all that you've read will suddenly blossom, provided you practice charity. This, I think, is especially important because we're living in such a self-preoccupied world, and even the best-intentioned prospects for the religious life are products of that world. Be hard on them, kind but hard, in the practice of charity, and you have made the greatest single contribution to their cultivation of prayer. Number 10, use of the sacraments. The plural sacraments is used advisedly. It means, of course, the sacraments of the Eucharist and of penance, both sacraments. Why should this be? The Holy Eucharist has as its distinctive sacramental grace the increase of the love of God. And through that love, an increase of the love of neighbor. Well, you pray only if and insofar as you love God. Prayer is conversation with someone I love. In fact, if you're talking to somebody you don't care for, you may call it conversation. They have a name for it now. Dialogue. When you really love someone, you have no difficulty engaging in conversation with that person. Where the one whom I love is God, and I am in converse with him, I'm praying. The Holy Eucharist, as communion, increases that virtue in the soul. And the same with the practice of fraternal charity, which we've just seen, is the indispensable precondition that God requires to increase in the individual the spirit of prayer. The sacrament of penance, I dare say, is becoming in many circles the most neglected of the sacraments. Some time ago, when I was giving some lectures in Baltic, Connecticut, that I mentioned to you two sisters, the sister waiting on me at table had just come back that summer from a month or so stay in Holland, her native land, and she said, "Sadly, Father, I've discovered in Holland nobody goes to confession anymore." I said, "Nobody, sister? As far as I can tell, nobody." No wonder that community, from a membership of 5,000, she told me, I couldn't believe it, 5,000 sisters that they had in Holland and all over the world, in the United States, as far as she knew, they were the only province still intact because they broke away from the parent in Holland, membership 120. So the sacrament of penance is absolutely necessary. Why? Because there is no more effective way of cleansing the soul than the sacrament of penance. And if, as we read in scriptures and faith tells us, that nothing undefiled can see God, no sinner can enter heaven, well, if that's true of the heaven in eternity, it is also true of the heaven on earth, which is one of my descriptions for prayer. Heaven, the fathers of the church describe as the awareness of God's presence, which produces joy. The awareness of God's presence, which produces joy. That's why St. Augustine says, when in the Lord's Prayer we begin, "Our Father who art in heaven," the heaven we first mean is the heaven in our own souls. That's St. Augustine. But if nothing undefiled can enter heaven, we better be undefiled. And the sacramental means of cleansing the soul provided by Christ himself is the sacrament of penance. Number 12, the 12th predisposition for mental prayer. Did he skip 11?
Mm-hmm.
Don't tell me.
Father, you're being chased and you keep saying that nothing
I couldn't have.
Can enter heaven.
Oh, did we have absence of worry?
Mm-hmm.
Or that's 11. Sister?
Father, did you hear me? I said you're being chased and you keep saying that nothing undefiled can enter heaven.
Nothing undefiled. Did I say undefiled?
Whoa.
Correct the tape. Nothing defiled can enter heaven. If you have it on your notes, please remove the un.
Thank you.
Thanks for serving as an eraser, sister. Number 11. The absence of worry. This, by the way, is the favorite tactic of the evil spirits. Good people who are beguiled by the devil into worry and anxiety because he knows full well he can't lead these people directly in the sin. What will he do? He will at least keep them from praying as well as they could by cluttering their minds with one anxiety after another. I think this is a safe statement. I think most distractions in prayer are sophisticated forms of worry. Put positively, peace of mind, peace of heart, or put the two together, peace of soul, is absolutely essential for successful prayer. How to cope with worry or anxiety in order to maintain oneself in the spirit of prayer. All worry ultimately is a form of distrust in God.
Please turn over to side B and push the play button immediately without rewinding the tape.